Hello, Swamp Fox. Hello, 169th Fighter Wing. This is Vito with the April Fox Chatter. Wherever you are this month, I hope you're enjoying some downtime, and thank you for tuning in. I'm going to talk a little bit about the exercise and what we did last month. We'll get into what the next 6 months look like, and then I'm going to bring Staff Sergeant Mitch Duncan back, and he's going to talk to us about Iranian-aligned militia groups and how that affects our operations and our people in the Middle East. So first off, what a great exercise last month. Thanks, everyone, for the effort on that. Like I said in my email, I was just really impressed. And the most important thing to me is the effort that goes into it and the mentality. Everything else will come along just fine if we have the right warrior attitude about it. So I just really appreciate so many things that I saw out there. So thanks to all of you. Our overall thing has been to crawl slash walk into this ACE or Agile Combat Employment. And that's what we did over the last 6 months. That's what you all embraced. And then this exercise was essentially laying the foundation of everything you've been practicing and learning for the last 6 months. And it went really well. So with the foundation now laid, we can think about moving into other things. But what we learned from ACE and some of the reading that I did since then is so many things that go into ACE and MCA or multi-capable airmen or mission-capable airmen, I think the term is morphing in that direction, has to do with things that are ill-defined, but items that are incredibly important to us, like creative problem solving. And so we're going to practice a lot of skill sets, and you all practiced a lot and showed a lot of skill sets. But one of the most important things is just having that creative problem solving to deal with a lot of unknowns. Because if, when we end up in one of these situations, we can't practice everything that's going to pop up. You're just going to have to be a creative problem solver. You're just going to have to be the kind of leaders and followers who can embrace the moment, identify challenges, and have the ability to find solutions to them, and not necessarily define solutions, and not ones that maybe were readily apparent to us when we went to large bases and had lots of resources in the past. You're going to be like, you know, when you're doing a job out of your basement and you don't feel like going to the store, or you can't because it's not there, and you just find a way to put together the materials that you need to get the job done. And that's the kind of attitude we're going to have with this ACE. And that's what I saw over the weekend, which was just awesome. Just take it up a half notch and get some of our generation principles done. Then we're going to go off to Sentry Savannah. And like I said, pilots can't do their thing if the jets don't take off the ground, and we can't do our base operating thing if we don't leave base. But once we get to Sentry Savannah, it is the time for the pilots to do their thing. And they need that opportunity because we can all do a great job getting the pilots there. But if they're not awesome ass kickers in the air, then that doesn't matter either, all the work that we did. And so they're going to practice that in a high-level exercise that will be Pacific-focused. Once we get done with that exercise, June is going to be, once again, a little bit of a relax. We're going to have family day in June, and that's the only thing that we have planned. July, we do not have drill, but that's where, like I said, we're looking to do Caribbean Fox, hopefully later in the month. And then we get into August. That's where we're going to feather in some of the midpoint prep. So we'll be doing some generation prep there, but I think at a pretty medium level. And the one thing that is really important to me is that we're talking about October now. We do this all just like we did with getting to this exercise, right? We just work it in over time so that we're never sprinting. So this whole getting into a midpoint, I want to keep the intensity at a real medium level for a while. I don't want us to get all beezed up about it. So we'll work that into August a bit and we'll be cool. September is a super IMR. So that means we need for ops and maintenance to get our IMR done. It's going to be a 4-day drill. However, your commanders are going to have discretion about whether they want you to actually be here for all 4 of those days, because October is also going to be a 4-day drill. And what I think October is mostly going to look like is mostly you're going to be here for 2 of those 4 days. We're just going to spread that out. So probably won't be all 1,350 of us here on any one day. We need 4 days. We need to spread out the IMR so we can get it all done. But your commanders have discretion to either you can come in all 4 days if you want to, but you can do those other 2 days any other time between now and the rest of the fiscal year. But you definitely want to get all your drills in to make sure you get all your points. And then, like I said, October is going to be a four-day generation exercise into a checkered flag / combat archer at Tyndall. That's going to be later in the month of October, so that'll be non-standard. It's right after Columbus Day, because when we'll be coming back for a four-day drill. Then into an archer. One of the things I've also stressed to the commanders is this archer is, and checkered flag is a lot. It's 3 weeks and we have a 4 day exercise leading into it. So let's, to the maximum extent, give people the ability to swap out. I know a lot of times we don't do a ton of swap outs and I'd really like to maximize those here to avoid it being a brutal time. So then we have our checkered flag and archer, which are spin up exercise for POTUS support, which is our next aviation package tasking in the spring of 25. Our POTUS tasking, as we learned last summer, is not something that is overly robust for us to prepare for. So I feel really good. And we've talked about this at the commander level of we can keep doing ACE because we feel pretty good about our ability to execute POTUS because we do it every day already. So we'll keep working in the ACE. We'll pause on it when we do the checkered flag in the archer, and then we'll have some amount of it. Like I said, we're just going to keep everything on a medium burn, stay mission focused without sprinting into any of this. And that's what the calendar looks like. I wanted to really walk everyone through that and talk it out loud to myself again to make sure it still makes sense. Please, any feedback that you have on that, pass that up through your commanders. I will tell you, one of the things I got over the last drill was people are really excited and they actually want more. If I'm misreading that, please pass that up. If you're feeling like we're doing more than you think you can manage with your civilian job, pass that up. And we're going to tailor appropriately. But the read I got walking around where people were excited to do the mission, excited to do an exercise. And of course, no one wants to sprint. No one wants to get burned out. But the vibe I got is one I've had for a long time is people want to do the job. They want to prepare for the job. They want to train for a job and they want to get better at what we think their job's going to be. And so that's what I'm going to keep doing. Our guest for this month, back by popular request, Staff Sergeant Mitch Duncan. Mitch, thanks for being here again. Always appreciate getting your insight and perspective into what's going on around the world.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So this is a little bit out of date with what's actually going on. When I originally asked Mitch to come and visit, I wanted to interview him on this topic of Iranian aligned militia groups last month, but we were really busy. But I thought it was really important because all of this tension in the Middle East is, it is inevitable that it will pop up again. And these Iranian aligned militia groups are something that tie in with the Houthis that we talked about last time and are something that is not going away anytime soon. And if we're over in the desert, it's going to be something we're going to have to deal with. So Mitch, can you just start off with giving us a little bit of background on these groups?
Yeah, so I'll probably refer to them as IAMG. So like Colonel Farrelly just said, Iranian Aligned Militia Group, just so you guys know. So that is a group that is part of the Iranian Threat Network. What that is a bunch of groups that are non-Iranian military members who operate all over the Middle East and are supported by Iran through money, intelligence, weapons, all sorts of things to do whatever they need to do in the Middle East. So, for example, the IMG is referring to like in Iraq and Syria. These are militia groups who are usually Shia, and they are attempting to kind of subvert U.S. influence in Iraq and Syria. That's their number one goal, first and foremost, is for the United States presence out of Iraq and Syria. Doing this by imposing costs on the U.S. forces. So think of all those rocket attacks we've seen the last few months, all the UAV strikes, all that. And they are highly controlled by Iran, because they're all supplied by Iran and they're all ideologically kind of combined.
Are these actual Iranians that are spread out in Iraq, Syria, Yemen? Are they actual Iranians or are they just pro-Iranians, but locally they are homegrown?
Kind of both. So I'll kind of use an example as one of the groups was the KH, Khatib Hezbollah, in Iraq. One of their leaders who's been killed since then, but one of the original founders and a big leader in that group, he is Iraqi. However, his mother was Iranian, and he married an Iranian woman, and he was later granted Iranian citizenship. So that's kind of the common theme, is there'll be Iraqis by birth, or Syrians, or wherever they are located at. However, Iran will offer them citizenship, or they'll marry an Iranian woman or something like that. So they have very, very close ties to Iran, but they are not technically Iranian homegrown citizens.
Does the local populace support them, or are they basically just running out of there and they're able, due to the lack of government infrastructure, able to operate? Or is it just that the locals actually agree with what they're trying to do?
In Iraq and Syria?
Yes.
It's very divided, right? Depending on religious identity. So Shia. Yes. But even within there, there's splits with Shias too. There are some Shia groups that want to work with the U.S. And then a lot of them actually start off kind of from these main militia groups. And if they work with the U.S., they'll splinter off into another militia group. So they'll have ties to like KH, but then they'll go political and they will form a coalition with other Iraqi groups. So you have a lot of sub groups from these other militia groups because they're so divided on so many different things. But the local populace, the poorer ones usually align with them, because that's what Iran's trying to do, is if you're poor and you're feeling repressed, then they come into you and say, well, here's weapons, intelligence.
That makes sense.
So they're targeting the people who feel oppressed the most. But not all of them agree in Iraq, for sure. There's a probably large proportion of Iraq that does want U.S. forces there. And they know that U.S. is really keeping Iraq stable at this moment.
Sure.
There's also a large population that also is supportive of them.
So it's a mix. That makes sense. They probably wouldn't be able to be successful if they didn't have some amount of ground level support. We know they're anti-U.S. Is their number one objective in the theater to be anti-U.S., or is it just pro-Iran and we happen to be in the way? Are they trying to be powerful and we're in the way, or are they, i.e., if we were gone, would they retreat back to Iran, or would they stay and maintain their power and try to maintain their influence in all these other countries?
I think their number one goal for sure is to remove U.S. influence from the region, which is also just happens to be the number one goal of Iran as well.
Well, and it's also the number one thing that stands in the way of them being more powerful, right? Because we know they want to have incredible influence over Iraq.
Yes. Over the whole region, right? If you look at it, U.S. is really the keeper of peace. I know it doesn't seem like that because everything going on, but it could be a lot worse if the U.S. was not in their region.
It doesn't seem like that to us at home, but it probably seems like that to them over there, because if we weren't there, certainly even more chaos could potentially ensue, or at least some amount of presence that keeps them in line.
Yes, sir. So yeah, you have that group, right? Iran, Turkey, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. Those four regional powers who are trying to vie for dominance. But when the U.S. is there as the world power, it kind of keeps them all somewhat in line.
And I would say Russia probably fills a similar role as well. However, they're more aligned with Iran, but they still play a similar role in terms of almost keeping people away from each other and the fights from getting out of control.
Yes, sir.
What is your assessment of the trend of these IAMGs? Stronger, getting weaker with time? Because this has been, decade, two decades of this has been going on. Are they getting stronger, weaker, or kind of plateaued?
I would say plateaued, I guess. I don't think they can get very much stronger without Iran giving them more conventional. So I guess it is possible they can get stronger. However, I think they're achieving their goals or getting close to it right now, right? We've already seen Iraqi political officials start to call for U.S. removal. So that's been their goal, is to continue doing that. So I don't think they need to get any stronger. They're already really, really strong. They have great coordination with Iran as it is now. But they definitely aren't decreasing in the future, I don't think, in power.
It seems like things have been quieter since the Tower 22 attack and our retribution for that. Is my assessment accurate? Are they laying low right now?
That is 1,000% correct. And you can look at that and kind of show the level of control Iran has over those groups. Because after the U.S. forces restruck in Iraq, and all, of course, those attacks from the IMGs quieted, I think that was probably because Iran did not want to risk conflict with the U.S. directly. And that's the whole point of the IMGs, right, is for them to push the U.S. out without Iran conventionally having to fight U.S., a fight they think they would lose.
That's how I look at it, too, is their goal is to be an annoyance. That's probably too small of a term. Stronger than that, but not engage in direct confrontation that would make us so angry that we would feel the need to completely crush them. So operate in the background, continue to gain influence to win the long war, as opposed to trying to confront us and move us out immediately.
Yes, sir. Imposing cost is going to be that general theme.
That makes sense, because it almost, to some extent, seemed like they didn't even really want what happened at Tower 22 to happen. What they want to do is have us have to have defenses, tie us down to some extent. But I'm sure if they had to do it again, I don't think they would replicate that.
I would agree with that. Yeah, again, that was not to start a war. It is to hinder the United States and make it expensive to stay in the Middle East.
So the other part that a lot of us recognize or were a part of was in 18 was the ATG or the Ottomf garrison. That is still there, correct? Sitting astride the road that goes from Damascus to Tehran.
Yes, sir. And it's very active. Syria as a whole is very active still. You may not hear about it a lot, but you still have Russia and Syria. You still have the U.S. in Syria. You still have Iran operating, IRGC operate in Syria. You still have Syrians operate in Syria. Other IMGs operate. You have a bunch of different actors, state and non-state, operating there right now.
And so the bottom line, this isn't going anywhere. If the U.S. is in theater, it's going to be a risk or a threat until something drastic changes on the world stage.
As long as U.S. forces are in Syria, I think it'll always be a risk.
I'll be glad to get our people home in a month because they've been dealing with this to some extent. They're a little bit more insulated, thankfully. But these groups, and whether it's the Houthis or anyone who has Iranian influence, has been a threat to them over the last 6 months. So it'll be great to have them home. Mitch, what else do you have to add?
We just should keep an eye on the Middle East. I don't think we're trending downward in violence in the Middle East anytime soon. I would expect violence to actually get worse in the next year. It may have a downturn, like you mentioned, after the attack from Tower 22. However, as long as the conflict goes on in Israel, it is likely a higher chance of a violence erupting somewhere else.
I have no doubt, and I also am sure that every time they see us talk about the Pacific and a pivot in that direction, they view that as an opportunity.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. As always, great to have you on. We could talk for another 15 minutes. I feel like I'm barely scraping the top of the iceberg here and have a longer conversation, but it's all the time we have, unfortunately, for today. So thanks for coming by again, Mitch. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
In terms of other news, we are a couple weeks out from our people starting to return. They're likely to come back in three waves. It looks really good that we're going to be able to bring them back en masse to either here direct at McIntyre or at Shaw or CAE. Of course, we'd like to bring them back here to McIntyre, but honestly, I don't think anyone would really care or fight all that hard. As long as they're not having to get on another plane out of BWI and they can land in the local area and have their families pick them up, I think we'll be able to deliver a win. I'm very excited to get them back. Spirits seem to be high. They're in the final sprint right now. And unfortunately, when you're deployed, you are sprinting. And so that's what they're doing. In other news, I've talked about this before, but you all see the construction going on our sim building, and I've talked to you about the drama to get those sims, and those sims are incredibly important to us because if we are going to be that unit that can perform well in the Pacific theater, we can't do it just by flying. We don't have enough airspace. We don't have all the assets to train with. We absolutely must have sims. We still don't have money for those sims. However, we're making some decent progress, and I have some hopes. I think that building's going to end up sitting vacant without sims for some amount of time, but my expectation of being able to get a win on that is growing. So I think it's going to work itself out. We've got a couple of plans in the works right now, some okay-ish news coming in, so not just all bad news, and it could get good fast. So we'll see where that goes, and I'll let you know. On the recapitalization front, we're always talking about it, recapitalization, a new fighter, nothing imminent. We need to get really comfortable in the F-16 in this mission. So embrace it. Change could come at any time. But my expectation is the way things are looking right now is it's going to be a long time in the F-16 still. However, be very grateful that we are not an A-10 unit in Michigan or Maryland. Grim news for them. It looks really unlikely that something's going to come in and save the day for them. And they are looking at turning into either a cyber unit or a tanker unit. So we actually have it pretty darn good right now compared to how rough some other units have it. Of course, we're going to keep leaning forward and trying to work for a better solution. But that's where we're at right now. But I feel okay about it. And we'll see if we can pull something out. But this is a years long process. So that's the big news that we have going on. Once again, as always, I appreciate everyone listening in. I do want to give another shout out to the people who put this podcast together, and that is our public affairs team. And not just a shout out for putting that together, but for winning a bunch of awards as well. And this is really impressive. So the 2023 Air Force Morale Media Award winners for the National Guard include feature photo first place Senior Airman Danielle Dawson, feature story third place Senior Airman Amy Rangel, portrait first place Senior Airman Danielle Dawson, and Video Story second place, Technical Sergeant Mackenzie Picalzo. These airmen will be competing against their active duty components for the Air Force-wide award, though it is incredibly impressive that they already won it for the Guard. So when your instincts tell you that you see these great individuals and they're doing a good job, your instincts are correct, and it's recognized at the national level. So Captain Lisa Allen sitting across from me right now. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for everything that you and your team do. And that is getting close to the end. The last thing we talk about is the comments box. No comments this month, which is unfortunate because I love having those. So please, I'm sure there are things around this base that are not perfect. And like I've said before, I actually really appreciate getting the feedback. Sometimes it's an item that we're working on, and sometimes it is an item that we are unaware of. Either way, I appreciate it being pointed out. Like I said, I keep up with every one of these, and the back gate, I know it's still not open. But what I can tell you is they're actually working on it right now. And hopefully by the time you listen to this, which I feel like I've said like the last 3 months, but hopefully it'll actually be open and we're all over it and everyone is embarrassed by the situation and we're leaning on the contractors. Okay, that wraps it up for me. Thank you again for listening. Have a great April. Looking forward to seeing everyone back here in May. Enjoy the time off with the family and hope everyone has a great spring break. Semper Primus.